Backstage Pass Radio is now a global podcast heard in 70 countries around the world. Our newly formed partnership with SYNAD Outdoor has us seeing great traction in Texas and Louisiana. Since SYNAD's beginnings in 1964, this family-owned and operated advertising company has become the largest independently held billboard company in Texas today. SYNAD prides itself on unbeatable service and turnaround time. Let their experienced design team create the perfect advertisement to showcase your business. Contact SYNAD today at 713-861-6013. And also make sure to visit their website at www.synad.com and tell them Backstage Pass Radio sent ya.
My guest this afternoon is a versatile singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist who was born in Chicago and raised in northern Michigan. It's Randy Holsey with Backstage Pass Radio, and I am excited to get to chat with an artist that is a four-time Emmy Award winner and has worked with such acts as Ted Nugent, Doug Pinnick, Jelly Roll, and Pink. Sit tight, and we will chat with Scott Little Billman when we come back.
This is Backstage Pass Radio, the podcast that's designed for the music junkie with a thirst for musical knowledge. Hi, this is Adam Gordon, and I want to thank you all for joining us today. Make sure you like, subscribe, and turn alerts on for this and all upcoming podcasts. And now, here's your host of Backstage Pass Radio, Randy Holsey.
Scott, what's up, my man? How are you?
I'm great, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's great to finally catch up to you. I know we've been doing some texting back and forth over the last month or so, but good to catch up with you. Good to see you, man.
Great to see you as well, sir.
So I'm chatting right before we hit the record button. You're out in sunny Las Vegas right now. What's taking you out to Las Vegas?
I do a lot of work out here. I'm doing a session tonight with Mike Varney and a couple of his people and things like that. But I have a beautiful daughter here I love so much. So she's here as well. So when I come to town, I work and I try to see her and it's all that.
Well, I know that we had pushed the original time. You had told me, yeah, I'm getting with Mike Varney. I'm like, man, what's up with that? I'm getting Trump for Mike Varney. What the hell is going on? but I understand. He's a more important guy. I get it.
Oh, man. Well, you know, I got to work. That's one thing. Right. I got
to
work.
Isn't that kind of that's an important thing, isn't it? To be able to make a little money, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's what's at. And Mike has he's just been he's one of my really, really, really good friends, and he's such a sweetheart of a guy, and his lineage with his record label and everything he's done is like, don't even need to really take anybody down a rabbit hole. You can just go with that, but just a great guy.
Well, at a high level, because there's going to be listeners on this show that that don't have a clue who Mike Varney is, so just at the 50,000 foot level, share with the listeners who we're talking about right now.
Mike had a very influential record label, Shrapnel Records, that I think goes all the way back to, I'm sure, the 80s. I don't know about the 70s, but the thing with Shrapnel is, because I'm a technician, you know, I get a lot of calls for my drumming situation, and that's kind of my wheelhouse, other than being a singer, songwriter, etc. If you said that you were signed on Shrapnel Records or whatever, that's pretty much, you don't even have to listen to the music. It's pretty much you can play, you know?
Yes.
And throughout my career, Shrapnel Records has always been a really shredding, you know, they have Tony McAlpine,
Paul Gilbert, all those,
you know,
guys,
people
right?
that are just incredible technicians.
Of course.
And that's who he is. And he had a very successful metal label. It's funny because I do, somehow I've got associated with so much metal. And I've done metal sessions, you know, and I play with Doug Pinnick, you know, that kind of comes from that. But I'm actually signed on a metal label, if you can believe it. But I'm an Americana guy. So,
yeah, I was going to say, how does that work?
Well, you know, Grinder Blues was on Megaforce Records.
Yes.
But then we bounced a record over to Metalville out of Germany. And then we already had that relationship going. So when I cut the Legend of Hipster Billings, they immediately signed it, which I was very happy about. But what happened with that is they were going to use my record as a launching pad to Americana, like, situation. And I don't know. I think that if you have a lot of metal relationships and things like that, it's possible you can't do that or something.
Sure.
But yeah, that's how metal got into my life.
I got you. Well, you spoke of that label and a record that you did in 2022 called The Legend of Hipster Billings.
Yeah.
How many records do you have out under the Little Billman solo efforts?
That would be my first.
The first one.
On Scott Little Billman that was put out, the distribution on that was The Orchard. I love that record, Smoke and Dragonflies. Mm-hmm. Was out in like 2015, but then I've done all these other projects. You know, I've been working with John Fogerty and things like that, the Jelly Roll thing. And then over to COVID, I recorded this record with Miles Fulwiter, the producer who did the Grinder Blues stuff as well. And so we knocked it out. It got signed, and there we go. And I'm very happy with the record. I think is great. Recorded great. That's, the songs are really well. I had a song on Big Sky, if anybody watches that show. And I've had a lot of film and TV placements in that regard.
But, yeah, and I want to talk more with you about that. But there's a song off of The Legend of Hipster Billings called Tooth and Nail. And I'd like to treat the listeners to a quick clip of that. And then we'll come back and chat. Is that cool?
Yeah, sure.
That was a song called Tooth and Nail off The Legend of Hipster Billings. Now, it's my understanding that you worked with Doug Pennock on this particular song, right, on that record?
Yeah. What happened was I wrote the tune, and Doug and I, we have a place in Lake Balboa, California. So it's a nice house there, something like that. And you know, and what's cool about that is that I play on his solo stuff, and he'll help me out on my solo stuff and things like that. So taking the lineage that we have together and things like that, I just said, hey, man, you know, would you mind doing this? And you like the song, and he put the bass down on it. And it's always, you know, I grew up on King's X and everything like that. So, and I've toured Europe with Doug a bunch of times. And Doug, you know, we've done two or three records together.
Interesting.
That have been signed and put out, and et cetera.
Of course.
But it's still just always so cool, man, to have Doug, you know, on anything, and I'm very grateful that he did that.
Yeah.
Know? So yeah, Doug is on that. That's him laying it down.
A great musician. And I had a buddy on my show, I think it was maybe season 3, a guy by the name of Randy St. John, who played drums on a couple of Ty Tabor's solo projects, a local musician here in the Houston area, and spent a lot of time out in L.A. on the Sunset Strip under a band called Sweet Savage back in the hair metal days. So that's his tie to King's X. But you talked about Shrapnel earlier, and I've had several artists on my show from Shrapnel. Chastain was one. I had Count 77 out of Vegas right there where you are right now.
Really good friends with all those guys.
Stoney Curtis was on my show just recently. I was out in Vegas, and he came to the hotel room. Great guy. Had some great stories there. And, of course, L.A. Guns is one that's on the Shrapnel label I've been able to chat with Adam Hamilton from L.A. Guns. So
cool.
Before we jump into this, what all is current for you as it relates to music? I know you have a lot of things going on. I know Grinder Blues is current, but what about specifically the Billman Brothers? Is there anything going on with the Billman Brothers right now?
No, there's not.
Okay.
My brother and I have taken a hiatus.
Okay.
And I'm not sure how long that hiatus is going to go. But no, I've been lucky enough to I'm recording with John Fogerty.
Okay.
A lot of stuff. And that's been really, really cool. My record, I'm not going to get it down a rabbit hole on how it was released. They kind of released everything at the same time instead of doing singles and et cetera, et cetera. There's a little bit of back history of we're working out now. Yeah, and the label has first rights of refusal on the second record. So we're kind of looking at all that. But currently, I have my new record is ready to go. And I'm very happy about that. But, yeah, I mean, doing sessions and concentrating on my thing. And I come to Vegas and I work with a lot of people. I sure. do sessions for Mike and everything.
Awesome.
I left the Jelly Roll thing to go work with Fogerty. And then Jelly Roll blows up. That was kind of funny.
Hindsight's always 2020, right?
Yeah. But that was, it was good times doing that whole thing. I'm in his, I recorded with him and toured with him. And then I'm in the video When I Get Rich. That's me on drums with Jelly.
Isn't his story cool, man? I mean, just like from nothing to everything. It's a pretty awesome story, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to make the fish bigger than it is. I was doing a gig with Kenny Olson at Soul Shines in Nashville and ran into Jelly there. And we talked about, you know, could I help him out? And I thought, well, you know, I can help you out. And he really didn't have too much going. But I will say this, when we did the video for When I Get Rich, it got like, you know, 2 million hits right away. But we were already touring all over the Midwest and all that kind of stuff. And I was doing the gangster rap thing. I mean, it was all gangster rap. Really? It's the Slamericans and that whole deal. But it was all gangster rap. And I didn't even know that he was going to transfer over to country until I came out to L.A. to work with John. And then next thing you know, about a year or so later, 2 years or something, a guy that used to tech for us said, I'm going to be at the Kimmel show tonight. Jelly Roll's going to be there. And because he knew I played with Jelly Roll, and I thought, oh, that's cool. Is it, okay, he's going to be there just as a spectator or what? And he's like, no, man, the guy's playing. I'm like, what? And from there, I've kind of, you know, we don't have each other on speed dial or anything, but it's we left on good terms and all that. And I'm really happy for his success. And I think it is incredible. It's probably out of my whole career, I've never seen anybody rise that quick in my life.
Yeah.
So kudos to him and what he's doing, and God bless him. Nothing but love for Jelly.
For sure. Well, going back to John Fogerty, for the listeners that are tuning in, John Fogerty from the famed Creedence Clearwater Revival group.
Yeah.
What specifically do you have going on with John these days? What are y'all working on?
Have you been thinking that you may need a little exercise in your daily routine while having a little fun doing it? I may have the solution. Hey, it's Randy Holsey here with Backstage Pass Radio. And about 6 months ago, I purchased an electric bike from EcoTrick and just thought about using it as a way to kind of get the blood flowing a few days a week. And to my surprise, I find myself on the bike just about every day. Not only am I getting a little exercise each day, but I'm also having a fun time seeing the neighborhood and maybe some areas that I probably would never have seen before I got the bike. Today, my family owns 4 of these EcoTrick bikes, and we're looking to add a few more soon. Make sure to check out the link in the description below for more details.
You know, I think we're doing a bunch of vault stuff. His kids are now very involved in his situation and plan, and they're like best friends that they grew up with. John was saying one time, you know, he knew this kid when he was like 2, and now he's a competent musician, you know, on drums and things like that stuff. So the camp, you know, I go up to his house in Thousand Oaks, and he has a song written, and we record it, and we will record 1 or 2 or 3 or whatever, and knock that out. I mean, it's a huge feather in my cap, stripe on my jacket. It's phenomenal. But like I say, I'm a session player with John. So it's not like I haven't done any live shows with him or anything, you know, which is kind of a bummer. But Kenny Arnoff, you know, that's his main gig. Yeah. Kenny was instrumental on helping me get with that. It's cool when you sit down, because he comes out in the studio, and we're just going to see like where this is going and what's going on. But the warm up, man, we go right into like, you know, all the Creedence cool stuff. And yeah, you're just playing it with John. So it's been a very cool experience. And it's just another cool thing.
You know, it's pretty interesting to me. And I mean, this part of my show, I didn't outline, but you know, you kind of mentioned it where Jelly Roll and Fogarty and this person and that person, I guess once you, it's almost like my podcast, when I got that first big name on my show, it got a lot easier to get other bigger name artists. Do you feel kind of the same way about, you know, when you played with that first big person, does that kind of springboard, did it springboard you from a musician perspective where like, oh, people now know who you are and they want you to come in and do these things? Does that help you? Does that hurt you? Talk to the listeners about that a little bit.
You know, right? What's sad but true about this business is that there is this thing, like when you're a professional musician, you just do everything, you know. Yeah. you do everything. That's what you do. And you know, I'm also an author on Alfred Publishing. I do got that going on and things like this. And people are like, hey, they dig it. And this is cool. And you're playing this gig, you're doing that, so like that. But when you get a few arenas under your belt and you're playing with the big boys and you're on a national tours and stuff like that, it's sad how people just validate you.
Yeah, sure.
It's like,
it's good and bad at the same time, right? Good and bad at the same time, right?
Well, yeah, I've got friends that are incredible musicians, incredible. And they've just stayed in the honky tonks, you know, and they do like Holiday Inn gigs and stuff. And the thing is that it's really about the breaks, but for anybody to discount them, that they are not professional musicians or I am better than them.
Yes.
Or why? Because I, you know, the Emmy thing and that kind of stuff and all the record deals. I'm just saying, I'm not a better musician. I just got some breaks.
Of course.
And that's what really, you know, really kind of is sad about this business. It's like, you know, I know drummers and guitar players and singers that blow my doors off. Do they have my resume? They don't have my resume, but it definitely, they don't get the kudos that I do. And it's bullshit.
It's interesting that you say that, because I'm a local musician here in Houston. And I've said that forever, that I know guys and gals right here in my backyard that can outplay some of the greatest players out there. But because nobody knows who they are, or they've never had that break, they'll go undiscovered and they'll play the dives and the honky tonks and the Holiday Inns, just like you said. But they can they can eat some of these players for lunch, man. I'm telling you. And you know this, right? Being a musician.
Oh, I got to tell you, just a fun little story. We were in Europe. And the opening band, drummer was incredible. I was freaked out after the show, his show, and I'm getting ready to go on and match that. Said, man, you know, incredible and stuff like that. He's like, and it was, I think it was in France. And the guy was a carpet cleaner. That's what he did for a living.
Wow.
And I tell you what, I got to resurrect that contact and just see who I'm talking about. I think his first name was Desi or something like that. Yeah. But I actually referred him, you know, I'm like, I can't do this gig, but I know a guy, and if you guys are going overseas, you know, this is the guy to do it. And, yeah, it's, I don't know, this business is just crazy like that. And, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it shows that a lot of times adages are so true. Like, you can't judge a book by its cover. Like, he's a carpet cleaner, right? But could come out and just beat the hell out of a set of drums, right? Or whatever. There's guitars like that too, right?
And, you know, judging a book by its cover, you know, that's kind of a thing with Jelly Roll. You know, I mean, who would have thought that a guy that looked like that and stuff like that I am so happy that he broke these barriers, man. Yeah. I really am. But there were times that it was like, that was like, you know, I think that he even thought it was holding him back, you know.
Of course.
But I'm glad that people recognize that he's got a thing and it's working now. So, but there's so many, like, all you got to do, dude, is go to Nashville and sit down, and the guy that is your waiter can cut your head off.
Yes.
So it doesn't, you know, it's all about, getting the breaks. And I think that a lot of these musicians, if I have any words of wisdom, is that the difference between, I think, me getting the breaks and other people getting the breaks is your hustle.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And if you don't hustle, because, you know, luck is when opportunity meets preparation. And, but you have to put yourself in a position that is You got to go out, man. I mean, and the older you get and everything like that, it becomes harder.
Of course.
You know, and you got to go out and drink beer with these dudes. You got to go to the hangs. You got to go to the jams. You got to tell people you're available. You got to do all that stuff. And then you'll get a call.
I agree. Well, it's interesting.
If you can play.
Yeah. Well, when you said you can't judge a book by its cover, I'll add one more piece to that. I was out in Nashville doing an interview not too long ago. And I met up with a local musician. He lives in Nashville now, but he's from Houston. And we're sitting in the Nashville Palace, and there's two guys on stage. And they're just song swapping is basically what they're doing. Some of the songs are kind of playing together. And a lot of what they were doing is, well, were originals, but they were playing some covers too. I'm like, man, these originals that this one guy at least is doing is they're phenomenal. So I started talking to them kind of after their gig, and they hung out at the table, and we exchanged information and didn't really, they gave me their name. So I got back to Houston and I pulled them up. And one of the guys who will be on my show in November played with Craig Morgan for a while. And then the other one played with Luke Combs. So you never know. It looked like two normal guys sitting up on the stage thinking, oh, these might be dishwashers somewhere too, but they've toured with some of the biggest names. So you never know. You never know what you're going to get, right? Whether it's the carpet cleaner or whatever, right?
Yeah. And the thing is, you never know what you're going to get. And I got to tell you, it's flighting. I mean, I played the White House. And I got to play the White House for the president and got flown in on, you know, the like Air Force One jet, the whole thing. And what I'm saying is that it lasts for like 2 weeks. And after that, what's next?
Yeah.
What's and the next buzz? And if you tell somebody that, you know, if you tell somebody, like, I do everything I possibly can to see my daughter when I come to Vegas. And if I get a gig where there's like, I mean, somebody's coming up to, can you go do a solo gig for me and stuff like that? So, and people will come out and they'll be shocked. Like, what are you? I can't believe you're. Oh, yeah. And it's like, well, I'm a professional musician. This is what we do. And they will discount you. That's what's funny. It's like they totally forget like all the cool stuff you've done. They're just judging you on the latest gig.
Exactly.
You played,
that's exactly it, man.
And that's when you just got to have some rhino skin, man.
Yeah.
You're just like, bug it.
Yeah.
I, you know. And, you know, if you are doing a gig like that, or I was just actually talking to a keyboard player here just yesterday, and he's got a great resume and he's doing his thing. And, you know, gigs like that keep your chops up. And you're getting paid.
Yes.
You're getting paid to keep your chops up.
Of course.
There's nothing but good that comes out of it. Now, do you want to do more with your career and everything like that? Well, that's your hustle.
Yeah.
If you want to, you know, get on that road and do it. And it's a grind, man. You got to grind.
For sure. Well, before we kind of get off that subject, I wanted to let the listeners know to check out, I'm sure Spotify, you can correct me where I'm wrong, Scott, but Spotify for the solo stuff, Little Billman. I know you had a single you released last year too called Lay Your Burden Down, right? So
yeah, I love that song. That would see, again, that's all about the record label and like what's going on with that. So I can only tell the listener that we are having Spotify problems on the technical side of things.
Sure.
That needs to be rectified.
Yep.
But I would appreciate people like going over there and checking
it
out.
Course.
It's my Instagram is Scott Billman.
Yep.
If they want to come on over there, I do a lot of stuff there. Facebook is Scott Billman. I got a Little Billman Facebook page, you know, band page.
Of course.
Which is totally cool. But the Spotify thing, that would be great if people went over there and checked it out.
Yeah,
I'm really proud of the record.
Yeah.
I really love that record. And I have my second one that is 95% done as we speak.
Okay. And we'll talk more about that. And we'll also make sure to point the listeners out to all your socials. Going back real quick to Grinder Blues, I know that you play with your brother in that group and Doug Pink from King's X, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
That is correct, sir.
Well, two brothers who are musicians, what was it like growing up in the Billman house as young boys, right? Was it always a music thing for you guys, or was it sports? Like, what was going on in the Billman house back in the gap?
My dad was a charter boat captain, military guy that had a construction company. So the mentality is that is, he was a very hardcore outlaw country guy. You know, that's all we listened to was Merle Haggard, Willie Nelson, Charlie Pride. He loved Charlie Pride, Bo Cephas, and all those guys. Like, that had a lot of, that was a big thing for me. And my songwriting as I write today and stuff like that comes from that. But we were I was an All-State outside linebacker.
Okay.
So football and sports were a huge thing with us. And playing, actually, I was all-conference. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say I'm always All-State. I was all-conference outside linebacker. But I had a full ride to Michigan State and things like this. My point is, music didn't hit us until we were like 14 or 16.
That's late.
And then we just became obsessed, man. I was obsessed with, and actually I started out on guitar. He started out on drums. And then one day we both were like, I don't know. We switched. And then it just went from there. But we excelled pretty damn quick. We got with these instruments really quick, and I was learning how to play drums job F MTV. There was no, you know, YouTube.
Of course, no.
It was all MTV and what those guys were doing, everything like that. And then, but it was a good household, you know. My brother and I just seemed to get that musical thing. My other two siblings, they don't play any instruments or whatever. And it was a strict household. My dad was a very cool dude. He liked he had a very good sense of humor, but he was also really strict. My mom was a sweetheart, greatest mother ever. She's still with us, thank God. And, but as it started building and we started getting recognition, we went to Musicians Institute, my brother and I.
Yep.
And then after that, we went into the real world and started doing all this stuff. Did the whole Sunset Strip thing, couldn't get signed, moved back to Chicago. And my brother actually got recognized by all the blues guys. And that's how I fell into the blues thing, because that and the Scott Little Billman thing comes from when I was a really small baby and everybody called me Little. Well, in my family, they all call me Little. So when I got with the blues guys, my brother would even say, well, I got Little on drums. But the other guys would call me Scott.
Okay.
So there was this major problem between Scott Little Billman, Scott Billman, all this kind of stuff. And I'm on a lot of Alligator Record recordings where they have Scott Little.
Oh, or really?
It's always, you know, on my credits and stuff. So that's how I went with, I had to go with like a 3-part namer now at this point. Sure. Scott Little Bowman, so right. People don't mess up that thing. But when I got signed with Metalville, I just transferred over to Little Billman. But that's kind of the rabbit hole of how everything's worked out.
Well, so I guess in what I failed to ask you in the beginning of the interview is like, how do people, like if you're casually talking to you, what do you like to be referred to? As Scott, are you Little? How do you like to be? I guess
I don't have a preference.
Okay,
as long as they don't say asshole. I
as long as they don't call you late for dinner, it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, there you go. No, I just say my name's Scott Little Billman. You call me, you know, whatever, Little Scott Billman, whatever. So no, I don't have preference.
But you don't have to call me Ray.
Exactly.
You remember that.
You don't have to call me Johnston, was it?
That's funny.
Holy crap.
Well, you know who your story sounds like, and I'm sure you've heard this over the years a million times.
Yes, it's always like a Charlie Manson kind of thing.
No.
That's usually what they say.
Well, no, about the, you know, how you and your brothers kind of flipped roles on the instruments, right? You know what other famous musicians did that as well? The Van Halen brothers, right?
Oh, yeah.
Eddie and Alex were kind of flipped instruments, and I guess one got bored with one instrument, and they said, no, you do this one, and I'll do that one, and that's how they got
there. Well, see, the thing, you know, to your point, my thing is that I'm a singer-songwriter, and I'm a mediocre guitar player. Like, nobody's going to call me for a session on guitar.
Okay.
But I can gig, and I can handle gigs, and I can do everything, but I'm not a technician like Steve Lukather or any of those kind of guys. But I will say that that's why we switched, because my brother was a terrible drummer. And okay. I was like a terrible guitar player. And then we switched, and that's, he just took to it on massive levels. And
found your strong point.
Yes, indeed, sir. When I went to Musicians Institute, it's funny. I was, we're all standing in P100. And the guy goes, you're going to need a locker partner. You know, you got to have a locker partner. And next thing you know, I got a tap on the shoulder and I turn around and this guy goes, hey man, you want to be locker partners? So I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. He goes, my name's Scott. He goes, yeah, my name's Ray Luzier. And he's the drummer for Korn, but he's one of the greatest drummers out there.
Sure.
And I'll say I learned more from Ray as my locker partner and still a very good friend than I did from the instructors there.
That's a cool story.
And he went on to do a lot of stuff on Shrapnel.
Yes.
Yeah, he went on to he was 18 years old and like Mike was using him on everything.
Wow.
He just had it, man. He had that whole, do you remember the band Racer X?
Yeah, of course. Paul Gilbert was in that band, right? Racer X?
Yeah, Paul Gilbert, Bruce Boulay.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and Bruce Boulay and Scott Travis on drums. And I mean, I came from Chicago, man, where it was like, I just knew all the Charlie Watts stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and that kind of thing. But Ray, man, he knew all Scott Travis.
Wow.
Stuff. So that was, yeah.
Well, you spoke about Musicians Institute there in Los Angeles, and I'm sure that had to have been a great experience going to a school that's dedicated to your passion, right? Like, I think a lot of kids go to college, right? And they don't know, A, what the hell they want to do. So they go in and they do all this, what do you call it, prereqs, you know, the Englishes and all of this. You go to a school that's dedicated to what you want to spend your life doing. Talk to the listeners, just very high level about the Musicians Institute. And I have to think that this is a lot like GIT, correct?
Yeah. See, I graduated from PIT, Percussion Institute of Technology.
Okay.
There's Guitar Institute and all that kind of stuff. And the cool thing about it is, you know, as I go back and talk about being a professional musician, the instructors, when I went through, were the greatest. I mean, you had, you know, like Ralph Humphrey from Zappa and all those guys, you know, teaching you fusion. You had Steve Houghton teaching you big band. You had Luis Conte, you know, on percussion, doing all that kind of stuff. And the people they had come through that we had clinics with was like, you know, Billy Ward from Black Sabbath. Yeah. You had, I mean, Vinny Caliuta, Steve Smith came through. You had also, oh my God, I can't believe Steve Smith
from Journey fame, right?
Yeah, Steve Smith. From, and also Steve Gadd, man.
Okay.
So we were very lucky. And the thing is that it's a year program and you fly by the seat of your pants. Now, when I went in, I didn't even really know how to read a quarter note. And everybody like Ray, I mean, and these people, stuff, they were doing, you know, band and school and all this kind of stuff like that. But you had to, you know, you had to graduate and you had to do your testing. Mm-hmm. And it was the most intense year of my life.
Really?
That I definitely wasn't going to like fail at it. Mm-hmm. You know, I just, there's no way. But it was so hard to get through that. But when you're there, yeah, you definitely strike the bloodstream of your passion going into the music business. I mean, for the passion of being a rock star. I mean, you can be a rock star coming out of MI at any time. Barry Squire, he was a great agent for me. He's still around. He's hooked so many people. I think that he was actually, he did Alanis Morissette's band.
Okay.
And then he got all those guys going. And then from there, I mean, like you can go from a carpet cleaner to playing arenas in a massive band through that guy. And Musicians Institute was really good with that. I think they're a little snooty now. I'm actually a success story out of Musicians Institute.
Okay. Yes.
But I find that they were all really down to earth, cool people when I went there.
Okay.
And I'll even stop in now and then to maybe see an old instructor or something. And they've reached that kind of like pretentious.
Well, because they produce
Juilliard
so many
thing,
names.
Like
yeah.
Juilliard sure. thing now or something.
Sure.
You know, man, it's like,
yeah.
That's not what the school was about. I mean, you know, man, yeah. Everybody was patting each other on the back, helping people along. Our instructors were cool and everything like that. And now I think it's a little prestigious, pompous.
Yeah.
Sorry, Musicians Institute.
Well, it was kind of probably like that was where the working class musicians went to learn.
Absolutely,
right. And now it's the Juilliards of the world where you got to have a little money or whatever to get in there to think about being
believe
accepted.
Me, what my parents paid. I think my parents only paid $3,000
really?
For me to go through. And now I think it's like $33,000.
Probably. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But you know, I don't want to, I'm not talking bad about it. My experience at Musicians Institute was phenomenal. So there you
like
go,
a,
everybody.
A cool
if
place.
You want to go to MI, go.
Yeah. Sounds like a cool place. Well, going back real quick, as far as Grinder Blues goes, how did you and Doug Pinnick connect initially? Do you remember the connection?
Yeah, I actually do. My really good friend, and we were just talking about him, Ray Luzier. He was doing a barbecue in LA, and I was actually in Vegas. And he called me up and said, I'm doing a barbecue tomorrow. Do you want to come around? And I said, yeah. So I went over to the barbecue. And there was a lot of cool people there. But then as I was there, you know, I saw Doug. And I'm like, fucking Doug Pinnick, man, right on. So I went over and we started talking. And then Doug wanted to do a, like, hard rock and blues thing. And that was right up my lineage alley, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like this. And I even got the guitar player too.
Of course.
And I tell you what, before that barbecue ended, we started that band.
No kidding.
Yeah. And I tell you what, 3 weeks later, Doug came over to Vegas. We wrote the album in 3 days. We recorded it at the Palms, and we were signed a month later on Megaforce Records.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, that was very easy. Very, very free and easy.
What a cool story. Well,
and there's, the video, Burn the Bridge, is really cool. You should tell people to check that out, man. Yeah. It's a really great video.
Of course. Yeah, yeah. Well, I worked in a Houston record store way back in the day. I think it was like 89, a place called Sound Warehouse. And Doug would remember. It was off Derry Ashford. But Doug used to come in all the time. And I remember back in probably 89-ish, I got him to sign the Gretchen Goes to Nebraska record. And I still have that to this day. So whenever you talk to Doug, tell him, yeah, man, the guy that just interviewed me still has your signed shit from 1989, man.
Fantastic. He'll love it. Yeah. Tell you, Doug is by far the greatest human being one of the greatest human beings I've ever met in my life. And I'm honored to be his friend and also just a phenomenal person, whole essence. And I tell you, man, at his age, he is still rocking and he's still doing great. He's always in shape and he's got such a great mental, beautiful outlook on life. The guy is just so phenomenal.
Well, I think he's in his 70s now, is he not?
He's 73.
Well, and that's a testament to get out there and still rock it like that, you know.
He does.
I know at 57, I have a hard time getting out of bed some mornings, you know, so that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, you got that right. Yeah, well, he's badass, man. Total badass. And to that point, who was always the first one on our list, in my opinion, the greatest person that I've got to hang out with, and actually he calls me out on stage. We got to jam with him. He was so great to us, with B.B. King.
Okay.
And if you go to my website, you can actually hear me playing with him. It's under the press thing. You hit it. It's a short clip, but it's me up there playing. He calls me out on stage, which is phenomenal. But the guy was one of the greatest humans I ever met in my life on a regular basis for who he was as a person. B.B. King, man, God love that man.
I think a lot of the casual listeners of music, they don't get the backstory of the people and whatnot. They just kind of hear what they hear on the radio. And that's what I love about doing the show as a musician myself and giving back to my peers and exposing their stuff. I love the stories behind the music. And I recently did an interview with a guy named Dave Rowe out of Nashville, was the bass player for Johnny Cash for 11 years and just recently passed. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people know about Johnny Cash, but he said Johnny Cash was the greatest human being on the planet to work for. And you never know what these people are like. So it's cool to hear your story of B.B. King and his story of Johnny Cash. It's, we only get what the media gives us, right? You don't ever get to know these people personally. So your story it resonates, and it's really cool to hear that side of the human side of the business, right?
Yeah, fantastic. You know, this is an old saying that people don't remember what you said or did. They remember how you made them feel.
Of course.
And my grandma was so that. You know, I mean, I've had a lot of people pass in my life and things like that. But that is, I tell you, that is so true, man. You can say and you can do and you can say and do. But if you don't make the people, they'll remember how you made them feel.
Of course.
And I think, you know, obviously through music, we all have that, blah, blah, blah. But as a human to human aspect, like a conversation that we're having and things like that, man, it's really that resonates so much. And I will say, yeah, I put Doug right up there, or B.B. King right up there with Doug. Sure. Either one. Those guys were they don't falter. They're always good humans.
Yeah. Day in and day out. Can always count on them. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, I wanted to share a quick clip of a song off of the El Dos record. And I'm going to share the song called Who Wants a Spankin'? And when we come back, we'll chat about that song. Cool?
Sure.
For mad, put away the toys. Feel my heart shaking, feel my body quaking, and my mind is breaking. Got the music cranking. Who wants a spanking? Who wants a spanking?
That was a song called Who Wants a Spankin'. Nice tune and great hook. You know, I listened to the whole catalog, and my wife stuck her head in the door the other day. She's like, who's that? I said, it's the guy I'm interviewing tomorrow night. She's like, what a cool song. So I said, I'm going to have to expose that to the listeners. Tell me about the three of you guys and how you contribute to the writing of the material. Maybe this song or all of the songs. Is there one of you guys that comes up with the main ideas? Is it a collaborative effort? Is it one person doing the songwriting for Grinder Blues?
We are all songwriters, and like on the first record we had, It Ain't Easy is my, you know, I did the guitar, did the whole thing, you know, wrote that, the lyrics, all that kind of stuff. I would say that was probably the only song that we ever had that was actually all done. And the only reason I'm telling you that is because it's kind of, might be the coolest project I've ever done, because nobody tells anybody, and Doug is really big on this. Nobody is going to tell anybody what to play or how to play or anything.
Okay.
And we go in there with a complete blank page. And my brother brought a lot of great riffs on the Eldos records that we embellished and went on. And we write lyrics on the fly. Doug handles most of that, but we're all lyricists, so we throw in on that whole thing and stuff. And it's because when I have to say we have a small Grinder Blues tour, like we got some fly-in dates or whatever to do or something like that, I kind of have to go back and listen. And I don't even know who that drummer is. I'm like, why did I even play that? I mean, it was just free your mind and play what you feel. That's what that project is. And it's the coolest project that I've ever done in that regard. The song Who Wants a Spankin'? I wish I could add some really cool backstory on this, but this is kind of funny. Jeff came up with the concept. J-Bo came up with the concept and the riff. And I think what he had was the chorus, Who Wants a Spankin'? And we're like, okay, well, there's that whole thing there. But it winds out being, I swear, it's about his kids.
Really?
It's about his kids, because
that's awesome.
The thing is that put away all the toys and all that shit.
Yes,
you can turn that. You can turn that into
sure.
something else. And I wish I had a little more cutting edge story for you, but that is literally about a father fathering his kids.
That's
but who wants to
see that's that. That's just as great a story as if you would have went down the other rabbit hole, man. You know,
yeah. Okay.
And to your point, I had a guy on my show, local musician here, he wrote a song called Three More Bottles and She's Gone. And he's a country artist. So you would think, okay, it's about drinking. I'm going to drink three more bottles and then she's going to leave me. But what he was singing about is him and his wife were foster parents. And they would feed the baby three more bottles and then have to give the baby back to its original mother, right? So you listen in a different way after you understand the meaning, the way the songwriter wrote the song. That's what I love about the stories behind the songs. You just listen in a different way, right?
Yeah. Well, that's what that is. And that's a cool title of his song.
Of course.
That's great. Well, that's how, if there's, you know, any other tunes, but that's how that one came together and is what it is. And we've all done a ton of interviews about that record, and that song always comes up, and that's like, well,
love
there it. You go.
Well, I love all of them, but that one stuck out to me for some reason. You know, it's funny what would resonate to me. Terry might hear a different one that she likes, and the guy across the street might like a different one off that record. I think it's all taste, and that's the beauty of music. But it's cool what
I
you
love
also...
I those records, you know.
Yeah.
I wish that we would... We never really got the right booking agency, and we did three European tours. They were great. We did theaters, you know, and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it never really came together on the management side or the booking agency side, and I feel bad about that. I don't take anything personal with that, but I think that those – I really love those records, and I know a lot of people that do, and a lot of Doug's heavyweight friends hit Doug up, you know, on these records are really cool and they're fun. So I don't know. It'd be nice to do maybe more or whatever, but those records I'm very proud of.
Yeah. Well,
and that's my dog on the cover.
Is it?
Yeah. That's Wyatt. I had him for 16 and a half years. And he's been on tour buses. He has been on
he looks cool,
trains,
man.
Planes. Yeah. That's and awesome. Willie Nelson loved. So anyways, make a long story short, Wyatt was on his last leg, technically, when I moved into the house with Doug. And Doug, I swear to God, as being the human that he is, treated that dog like a prince. And every day when he said, "Hey, Scott, do you mind, you know, if I feed Wyatt?" And I'm like, "Well, if you want to feed Wyatt." And it would turn into this, like, New Orleans band coming down the street of beating Wyatt.
Really?
Bam, bam, bam. He's banging with a wooden spoon, and he gets him, like, the greatest food ever and everything. Oh, my God, he was so spoiled and so great. And when the record label said, "Hey, you know, what's the record? What are we going to put on the cover of this record?" I didn't feel like I had the sole say in that, so I just hit up Doug and J-Bo, and Doug immediately came back with this picture that I took of Wyatt from a long time ago. And he said, "Let's do that as a cover." My brother said, "Let's do it." And so, yeah, there's Wyatt with the cowboy hat. It's got an ZZ Top kind of thing going on.
Of course. Well, you mentioned to the listeners that's who's on the front of the record, but you called the record El Dos. Where did that name come from?
That came within 5 minutes of just putting this all together. We're putting Wyatt on the cover, and Doug said, "Let's call it El Dos because it's our second record."
That makes sense. So, there you go,
these
right?
These things are definitely not overthought.
Your stories suck, man. I wanted more exactly, stories, better meetings. No, this is great, man. Great stuff.
Yeah. Well, we lit candles and turned books. Yeah. No, we just threw it out there. Yeah, go ahead.
That's funny. No, I was going to also say before we kind of got off the music spot that I listened to some of the 2015 stuff from you as well, and I love the song Yesterday, by the way. Great stuff. Yeah, and I wanted to turn kind of quickly and chat about the Emmy Awards. What an accomplishment. I mean, how many people can say that they've even been nominated, let alone win Emmy Awards, right? Share with the listeners what the four Emmys were for.
It's total luck. My brother and I got hooked up with Warner Chappell, and we just got tons of massive movie and TV placements. And we had songs on Sons of Anarchy, documentaries. Our last Emmy that we won, we were the last band ever to record out of Cherokee Studios in Los Angeles.
Okay. So,
and they did a documentary on that, and it won an Emmy. It's great. You get nominated, and then you go to the event, you get your tuxedo, and you actually win, and it's a total luck. I just have no idea. I can't even really say anything more about it. It's just one of those things. Does it put you in a upper echelon? I think it does, but what it does is they just throw you, like, here's the budget of the production. Here's the budget, man. I don't care if you got Grammys, Emmys. You got to work within that budget, and that's really what it is. And, yeah, at our level, yeah, we've got Emmys, and this guy's got Emmys, and this guy's got Grammys, and it's just, I don't know.
Sure.
It's an upper echelon thing, but they're really beautiful trophies. I give them to my mom, you know. I love her, and I give her that, and they're cool to look at, but I don't think they... Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like being, if you go to war and you come back with a silver star.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like, well, I got a thing on my jacket, or I got this or that. But... it hasn't really put, like, more money in my pocket.
Right.
Because people think they don't. It's just willing to, it's beautiful trophies. You got that on your thing, you know?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you say that because you made a reference to, you know, a guy in the military coming back with a Purple Heart or a Bronze Star.
Yeah.
I'm not a military guy, so I may not have said those right. But to them, while it's probably more prestigious to the civilian than it is to them, because in their mind, I was just doing my job, man. You know what I'm saying?
That's it.
And
you
for you,
nail right on,
man,
the
I was just playing the drums, or I was just strumming a chord, and it just worked out, and I got nominated, and I won the award. So you don't think too much about it, but for the outsider looking in, it's like, holy shit, man, that's really cool. And I know your mom is proud to have the Emmys sitting on a shelf somewhere in the house. I mean, how many moms can say that their kids have won Emmys? So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I really do. But again, back to your military thing, it's like we both are going into war. I might have done something to impress somebody for a minute to earn that thing, but I'm not any better than all my comrades on the field. So, right. Yeah, the Emmy thing is like, you know, man, and it's total fucking luck. It just happens. And you have the right people that are doing it for you. So, like, Warner Chappell and these people, they're getting it to the right people. They're getting it to the right things. And I've been very fortunate in that regard.
Yeah.
That I got trophies. Does that make me cooler than people? No. But I got a trophy. Look, I got a trophy.
Your music has appeared like on many of the major networks, correct? Fox,
NBC.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, hundreds.
Yeah.
Sons of Anarchy was always fun because we had the season 5 finale on that, and you're watching the show, and it's a season five, and everybody's, you know, we used to have parties.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a bunch of people come over on a big screen and watch it, and hey, there it is. Also, video games. I Wanna Fly was the main track on one of the Heat, NASCAR Heat or whatever.
Okay.
That was cool and stuff. And yeah, and I got to tell you, we were in Prague and stuff like that. And one of the movies that we had came on, and I even forgot about it. And I'm literally in my hotel room, and it's like 1:30 in the morning. And I'm ringing my brother's room, going, dude, you got to turn on TV, man. That movie that we did, our tune's playing, you know. It's fun.
If you put some of your music on a game like that, is that mailbox money forever for you? How does that work?
You know what?
Without going down a rabbit hole, right?
I think, well, yeah, the residuals are phenomenal when they first hit, and then they peter down to nothing.
Okay.
But the thing on the video game with that, I think that was a buyout, possibly. I don't know if that was a residual thing. I think that was a buyout. Crucial Music, I think our publisher got us that one. But, yeah, for everything else, you know, and I'm also in the Screen Actors Guild and all that. So You get union money, you get that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's good work when you get it, brother. It's good work when you get it.
The reason I asked that is I had a buddy on the show, lead singer for a band called Hardline, Johnny Gioeli. And Johnny sang in a band called Crush 40. And Crush 40 did many, many, many songs for the Sonic the Hedgehog video games, cool. Right? So their stuff is constantly played all the time. And I don't think I ever asked Johnny about, is that just kind of mailbox money? So when you brought up the game thing, I was wondering if, like a songwriter, you know, every time that song gets played on the radio or thing. Record or whatever. So I assume it's that was thing. The same. Yeah.
You know, even talking at the Fogarty camp, and you're just kind of, I mean, I know my place, we're sitting on the couch, you know, talking like that, but yeah, he said that the gold rush is over, man. The Spotify thing is a massive disaster for so many artists. I'm not even talking about where I'm sitting with the problem between the technology.
Yeah.
But I'm saying that he's kind of mind blown, because it's like, you not only got paid for being on the radio, you got paid for record sales, you also got paid for merchandise and the gig money.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's all gone, except for the gig money. And the merchandise is cool.
Yeah.
But, man, I tell you, I wish I would have, I mean, 10 years either way. The people from the 70s on up till Napster hit or whatever. Yeah. I mean, everybody was doing great. My brother and I recorded our first record that was actually produced by Jim Gaines, which is a big feather in our cap. But we put it out independently, man, and we sold thousands of those records. And I mean, it got us, mortgages for houses and shit.
Sure. Yeah, of course.
You know, and that kind of stuff, plus gig money and stuff. And it just keeps petering away, you know, and we never really took YouTube seriously. That was probably a bad decision there. But for a lot of our songs for our records, we're like, oh, we're not going to spend $3,000 on a video. We probably should have, you know, but it's very Darwin on the ways that it's not the strongest animal or the smartest animal that survives. It's the most adaptable.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the heyday, like these new artists that are doing their thing. I'm glad. I don't know, like, how much money. I mean, Jelly Roll's doing really great, and God bless him. And I know that he's got some pretty cool things financially happening. But I think that he would be – I don't think he's as rich as he could have been if this would have been 20 years ago.
Makes sense.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
sure.
I mean, he's at that level to where I think it's actually – I mean, he's not hurting. I know he's not hurting. But my thing is that – and I'm only using him as an example. I mean, any artist that is going right now – the Spotify, I mean, the whole, it's bullshit, man.
It's,
you know,
like
Snoop Dogg had a really good thing. Snoop Dogg is on top of it. He had a really good rebuttal to, like, what is going on.
Share it. What were you going to say about Snoop Dogg?
Anyways, that's all I got to say about that.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you if, with total respect and for your playing and your musicianship, and not to slight you in any way, this is, I preface what I'm going to say by telling you that, but
I get slighted all the time, buddy. You're not going to
remember. No. You'll see where I'm going with this, but do you ever, or have you ever sat in a room with the John Fogertys of the world and said, how in the fuck did I get here, man? I'm working with some of these elite people, man. You know you know what I'm saying, right? It's not to slight your talents in any means, but sometimes we just pinch ourselves and say, What in the hell, man? This is a legend that I'm sitting here. The BB Kings, the John Fogertys of the world, right?
I got to sit around for 6 weeks with Ray Charles, buddy guy. Billy Gibbons, we're on the road. I mean, I got to sit at an intimate table at the White House with the President of the United States. And what I'm saying with that is how the hell did I get there? I got to tell you, man, I got to reflect back on it's the hustle. And there's something about the hustle. Like, you're not hustling these gigs, but you're hustling a perpetuating atmosphere universally that is putting things in motion that you have to do physically. Yeah, I'm a Taoist, you know, sure. Very much into the Tao Te Ching and how Tao works and everything like that. And my thing is, though, you still have to be active. Things will come to you, but you still have to be active. And again, how did I get here? I don't know. I don't think I suck.
It was the good looks, wasn't it?
It was the good looks, buddy. Hey,
if you're not going to say it, I'll just say it for you. I don't want you to toot your own horn, man. Real quick. Yeah. Tell me and the listeners a little bit about some of the endorsements that you have. Do you still carry some endorsements with so much anymore?
You know, I've been all over the map on my endorsements. Epiphone has been phenomenal to me. They gave me a Country Deluxe, beautiful. It's like a 335 orange Bigsby thing. It's just incredible. And that's been phenomenal. Doug actually just hooked me up with Schecter. Schecter gave me Telecaster version of the Telecaster. And I did something, I don't know, a while ago back that... Samick, actually, they're a lower line of guitars, but their top lines are really well, really good. And they sent me like 9 guitars one time. It was just phenomenal. On the drumming thing, I'm with Soul Tone Cymbals. I'm with Regal Tip drumsticks. Sticks, I got Remo heads, DW Hardware. They've been really good on, they've been really great on, my pedals and all that kind of stuff. But I was with this symbols for a million years. So yeah, the endorsement thing is a rabbit hole. I'm kind of at the point where I don't need any more gear. I mean, on the drumming side of things. Yeah. You break a cymbal, that's going to dent your pocketbook. You want to have a really good relationship with your endorsements with that and sticks.
Yeah.
But I don't need any more guitars. I don't need any more drums.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
I can hardly play what I got.
Yeah, you can only get so much of that stuff, right? And you're like, what, am I going to just give the rest of it away or whatever, right?
Yeah, and I've got rock star friends who are, I'm not going to say who, but they have like...
They know somebody.
50 drum sets. Right. You know, and it's like... So I guess, you know, you can liquidate it when you get older or something. But my thing is...
retirement.
And God bless endorsements. I mean, I never take endorsement lightly. You know, I would never like sell an endorsement piece. Like, I still have the guitars they send me, and it's like, I'm not going to sell them.
Exactly.
And I play them and I take pictures with them and stuff. But I got to tell you, but Epiphone, man, they're great. I've got my Epiphone J200 Jumbo that I've played forever. And then the Schecter's great. And then the Country Deluxe.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Epiphone, I was at the Gibson Garage in Nashville not too long ago, and I had my eye on a J200, and gee, boy, that's hard to pull the trigger on that, but what an amazing guitar to add to the collection, right? Scott, from a music perspective, you spoke of it a little earlier. Tell us about the new stuff that the listeners can look forward to, and then talk a little bit about any upcoming small tours, big tours, shows that you might have as well.
Yeah. I have my record coming out. Well, here's the deal. I got to work out the whole record contracts and how that's going to go, et cetera. But I'm very excited about that record, the songwriting on that. So that's what I'm very excited about and how that's coming around. The Grinder Blues thing, you know, we've been talking about doing at least an EP or something. Doug's fired up. My brother's got some riffs. We just need to get in the same room and knock that out. I love playing with that band. I really do. The tours that we've done, everything like that, are great. I'd like to do more of that. The Fogarty thing comes and goes.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, John's brother calls me and lets me know kind of like what's going on or this and that. And sometimes things get canceled. A lot of things get canceled due to COVID. Now that we got a grip on that, it's not as bad, but that was definitely a thing.
Yeah.
And I'm always on call, man. So, you know, anybody looking or needing or opportunities, that kind of thing. But that's about it.
Have work, will travel, right? That's the motto.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Where can the listeners find you on social media?
I am on Instagram. I am Scott Billman with one T, always Scott Billman. On Facebook, I am Scott Billman. On my band page, which is Little Billman, please come over there because I've got a lot of cool things I post on that. There is Grinder Blues on mostly our Facebook page is pretty much updated all the time. That's on Facebook, Grinder Blues. And then my clothing line, I actually have a really cool clothing line that I've got going on right now called Hillbilly Royalty. And that's at hillbillyroyalty.com. And that's done really, really well, especially out of Nashville. And there's a lot of influential people that wear that. And I don't know.
Very cool. And just to mention also, grinderblues.com, people can find you there. ScottBillman.com on the websites. A lot of people don't think about the websites too much anymore because of all the social media, but you guys can definitely find Scott and information about what he has going on there. This has been super cool, man. I appreciate you for taking the time, sharing the story. I wish you guys continued success with the music and any shows and tours that you have coming up. And maybe when the new stuff comes up, you can text me and we'll do a quick segue and put something out there for the new stuff as well. Sound like a plan?
Sounds like a great plan.
All right.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor talking to you, buddy.
Yeah. Well, you guys go out and follow Scott, Grinder Blues, and everything else that he has going on. Check out the show dates, the merch, and the current events. I ask the listeners to follow the show on Facebook at Backstage Pass Radio Podcast and on Instagram at Backstage Pass Radio and on the website at BackstagePassRadio.com. You guys take care of yourselves and one another, and we'll see you right back here on the next episode of Backstage Pass Radio.
Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoyed today's episode of Backstage Pass Radio. Make sure to follow Randy on Facebook and Instagram at Randy Halsey Music and on Twitter at @RHalseyMusic. Also, make sure to like, subscribe, and turn on alerts for upcoming podcasts. If you enjoyed the podcast, make sure to share the link with a friend and tell them Backstage Pass Radio is the best show on the web for everything music. We'll see you next time right here on Backstage Pass Radio.